This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
That indeed it is. And we are talking about the Murtaughs because, well, why not? What else are we going to be talking about? This trial just getting crazier and crazier by the day. And that's where the psychology of this thing all comes into play. And the more I ask questions, the more questions I have. Joni Johnston is joining us. Joni is an excellent forensic psychologist and a licensed private investigator. Always gives some wonderful insight into the cases that we are covering for you right here. Joni, there's a lot to unpack from the last 7-8 days of this trial since we last spoke. What's been standing out to you?
You know, I think what's standing out is just the increasing amount of circumstantial evidence that's piling up. And the detailed, you know, I guess, nature of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just, I think it's really made it a very difficult job for the defense to come back and, you know, and present reasonable doubt. And I guess the other thing that's kind of standing out is you think, if you're a juror in this case, you're kind of going, how would I respond if my wife and my son had been murdered?
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at Alec Murdoch's behavior and you're like, that's not how he's responding. That's not how he did respond. This is a person who, you know, has been in a position of power for really his entire life, has a number of resources, a number of connections. You would think that if, you know, his wife and child were murdered, he would be out there setting up tip lines and, you know, talking to every connection he had, going on the news, appealing for information. And we don't see any of that in terms of how he responded. And I think that just makes it very difficult to explain.
That was very interesting to me when we look back on it after the actual murders take place, because people who are just kind of starting to follow this may not remember that he was a free man for a very long time after the murders took place. This wasn't a, we arrest you on the scene for being a suspect in the murder of your wife and son. Now, charges were brought initially for some of the money and financial issues, but he was out on that too. And eventually then these charges did come about. But in all those months that he was free, there was no, my gosh, my wife and son were killed. We really got to find the murderer. It was business as usual for him, the best that he could make it.
It really was. And the other part of it is, I mean, you have another son. I mean, if you're telling the police that you think somehow you're being targeted or your family is being targeted, perhaps because of this boat accident and people are wanting to, you know, retaliate against you, or, you know, aren't you going to be hiring security, setting up cameras, being concerned about your other son and where he's going and what he's doing? Aren't you going to be concerned about your safety? I mean, the things that we would just naturally expect in that situation, we just don't see.
There's so many things that we just don't see. And everyone is looking for motive here in this. I watched another Murtaugh documentary over the weekend that I had seen months ago, but I just watched it again to refresh myself. It's called Low Country. It's on HBO. And that brought back other parts to this case that we really haven't been talking about, but also very questionable in the life of Alec Murtaugh. Is Buster and Buster's connection to a hit and run that looked very, very suspicious and was also kind of pushed to the side, and they never really found the killer, but there he kind of went off the radar and disappeared from the area right after that. And there's a lot of allegations there that also look pretty damning if that takes off and does get a proper investigation. Just another person. There's so much death surrounding this guy and his family. I mean, they all are connected to different deaths when you look at it, even the dead ones. It's so bizarre that this sort of dynamic in a family existed. We look at this from the outside and go, this is crazy, but this almost seems to be normal life for them for a very long time.
Well, it's what does seem to have been, you know, true for a long period of time is this kind of sense of impunity, I think.
Yeah.
Where this family was so I guess, beloved in the community to some extent. They were held in such high esteem. They had such high power. And so I think you're right. It's sometimes kind of frightening, isn't it, to think about any family think bad things starting to happen and continuing to happen. And yet for years and years, there's no real investigation or no real, you know, let's pull the cover back and see what's really in here. What's going on here?
Exactly. I mean, I don't know if beloved is even the right word. I don't know if feared is more applicable. Yeah. I don't even know what it would be. It's like they exist. They're kind of a thorn in everyone's side to a certain extent. You know, they can help you if they like you. They can destroy you if they want to. They're there. And they've existed with that dynamic for so long. But I don't know that how long that dynamic can continue to exist in places like this. And I know they're not the only ones. There's other parts of the country. There's other parts, and I'm sure South Carolina, that have these, you know, dynasty type families that go on and continue to thrive to a certain extent. But is this a type of lifestyle that can still go on in other areas, do you feel?
I mean, I think what you said at the beginning, I would agree with, and that, you know, given the right circumstances, you have smaller communities, you have more isolated communities, you have families with that history mm-hmm. and that tradition. I mean, I grew up in a relatively small town, relatively, you know, isolated in some respects. And I can certainly think of a couple of families who I can't say that they had the same status as a Murdoch family or the same level of power, but they were certainly, you know, kind of seen differently. Mm-hmm. You know, and that kind of halo, or like you said, because I think when you talk about, is it beloved or is it feared? It's probably both. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they had powerful friends and powerful enemies. The bottom line was, you don't want to cross this family. And that becomes kind of a legacy. And I think there's also, it seems like in this family, a legacy, you know, going generations back, a very positive legacy. You know, I don't think this entire family forever has been, you know, involved in some of the things that we're seeing, at least are alleged currently. So that also kind of, you know, that halo effect can trickle down mm-hmm. and it can take a long time for it to get removed.
And the thing is, there's more to the Murdaugh family than just Alec and Maggie Murdaugh. There's brothers. There's other living people who are out there that live in this community, that have power in this community. If you're a juror right now on this case and you're sitting there in trial and you're from the area, you know the dynamic. You may not know all the details here and you're trying to be as impartial as you can on this. Do you think they're sitting there feeling some fear about, you know, saying, yeah, I think this guy is guilty for fear of what could happen to them or their family? Are they feeling intimidation right now, whether or not there's any sort of direct intimidation going on?
You know, I wouldn't imagine so, given, you know, what's happened, you know, the number of deaths that have happened, including in that family. And I do think that there obviously are going to be some, you know, there's some upstanding citizens that are part of this family that are operating in the community. Mm-hmm. So I don't think at this point, and I think this is new. If anything, I wonder if you're a juror and you're hearing all about these alleged things that have gone on forever, if this could have a boomerang effect, you know, on the jury, where they're kind of sitting here kind of going, you know, this has been going on for how long? All these things we're hearing about, you know, it kind of, you know, this kind of need for almost, you know, excessive punishment or at least an eagerness to make sure that justice is served.
What do you make of his surviving son, Buster, that is in the courtroom almost every day with the visible flipping off the attorney for family who lost their daughter in the boating crash, kicking a water bottle when asked to move to a different seat? Obviously this is a kid, yeah, who's struggling with, you know, dealing with the loss of his, you know, mother and his brother. But is this someone who is just, you know, still very much on board with the family and just kind of riding the train along?
Well, he's in it. I mean, I don't want to excuse some behavior that certainly was insensitive, inappropriate. We can, there's all kinds of labels we could apply to that. That would probably be accurate. He is somebody who is in a difficult position. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has lost his brother. He's lost his mom. And, you know, my sense is that he is completely 100% committed to his father.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is, and to some extent, I'm not sure what he would have to gain by, at this point, distancing himself from his father. He's so tied to him in some respects. From an optic standpoint, you kind of go, you think he would do better than that, mm-hmm. right? He's in there supporting his father. Is that how you're supporting your father? You know, how does that look? You know, does that reflect on his father to see his son in there doing things like that? Mm-hmm. And I think it may, to some extent, kind of reflect the kind of sense of entitlement mm-hmm. and privilege this family's had for so many years. I know reading a couple of accounts of Paul when he was in the emergency room after the boat crash.
Yeah.
And people were talking about that, you know, some of the nurses said, I've never seen anybody act more arrogant and more haughty in that situation when somebody's missing.
Yeah.
And you're responsible for that. So I think that that's a reflection perhaps of this legacy that they've kind of abused or enjoyed, and probably both. And yet in this situation, it is not going to help him in any way or his father.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Joni Johnston, thank you so much for your insight. Always super appreciated. There is more to come with Joni a little bit later in the day here on the feed. So be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss more of that conversation. If you want to weigh in with your thoughts, you can do so. 888-5-KILLER is the phone number. 888-554-5537 to share your thoughts on all of this stuff involving the Murdaughs or any case that we're following for you. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our breaking updates and discussions on these cases. You can try it for 3 days free. Get it ad-free through Apple Podcasts right now. Check it out. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.